Welcome to Northwest Prime, bringing Seattle to the world and the world to Seattle. Follow us on Twitter at iGuestInfo. Send us your questions and we'll try to answer. Now enjoy the show. Freedom Writers, and you might have seen the movie. Hilary Swank played the role of the teacher in the Freedom Writers. I think most people have heard of the book or seen the movie. It's an honor to have Darius with us today. Darius, thanks for coming on.
Hi, how are you? Nice to be here.
Good. Definitely thanks for coming on. So take us really back to the beginning, Darius, and I do want to tell the listeners, if you want to follow along and look at Darius's website kind of as we're talking here, you can go to dariusonline.com, and you can get all kinds of information about Darius, and you can kind of follow along with us as he's going through his story. But Darius has a new book coming out, and we're going to be talking about that as the show progresses. But For those maybe who didn't read the book, Darius, Freedom Writers, or see the movie, can you just kind of take us back to the beginning with you and then kind of how that led up to where you're at now?
Definitely. Well, as in 1994, I had went through a lot of things within my life previously to that time, such as my father dying from AIDS, also things like selling drugs from the age of 7 and, you know, helping my brother out as far as that's concerned and being involved in gangs. And I wound up on a very, very bad path and ended up in a situation where I was just in jail and, you know, it was just really, really bad for me. And so in 1994, I wound up in a school called Wilson High School in Long Beach, California, and I wound up in Miss Gruel's class, which was an English class. Now, this seemed like a situation that would actually end up being, you know, just a situation that anybody would have just been like, oh, well, this person don't care and everything else. And that's how I felt about Miss Gruel, that she didn't care and that, you know, she was like any other teacher that was there to babysit us. And so things started to change when she began to show interest in us and began to have a teaching style that was so different from any other teaching style that anyone has ever had. Have you ever seen the cartoon Magic School Bus?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, in Magic School Bus, they have a teacher that usually they'll read a book or they'll do something, and next thing you know, they'll hop on this Magic School Bus and those things will come to life, such as Tall Tales of Pecosville and things of that nature. So She was pretty much the same way. You know, we read The Color Purple. We read by Alice Walker. We read Night by Elie Wiesel. We read the Anne Frank's Diary, the Salatha's Diary. And when we read all of these things, you know, it was interesting how she brought those books to life for us. And the way those books came to life is that we actually invited Zlata, the young girl that wrote the book about her time in Sarajevo. And And she came out, and we had a great time. And then she also, we read the Anne Frank diary, and one of the most memorable things that I've got to, you know, do and accomplish was the fact that the lady that hid Anne Frank, Meet Geese, was actually able to come out to where we were in Long Beach, California. She's deceased now, but she was able to come out to Long Beach, California. And that was the moment that changed my life. And the reason why that was the moment that changed my life was because here goes a lady that stood up to something that she didn't even have to stand up to, because she was a Dutch woman. So she didn't have to stand up for, she didn't have to protect herself. She was protecting someone else, just like Oscar Schindler did. And because of that, that meant a lot to me, because what she had in her, I seen in myself, of someone that cared about people, somebody that cared enough to put themselves in the line of danger in order to help someone else succeed or help someone else make it. And so be it that she came out, you know, all the things that she had to say, there was one thing that she said that I wrote about in the book, and that was also depicted on the movie, Freedom Rider, was a thing that she said where she said, I stood up and I said, me, you know, I feel that you're my hero. And she was like, no, you know, I'm not a hero. I just simply did what I had to do. But you guys are the heroes. And so she says, so if you're saying that I'm a hero, then I'll pass the baton to you, and you guys go forth and do what you have to do. And from that moment forward, I decided that everything in me had to change. Now, granted, when you guys see the movie, you guys see that, oh, that changed like in a second. And for me, it wasn't that easy, and it wasn't that quick for me, because I was involved in gangs and all of that. So I can't just say I'm out. I can't just say I'm going to get away from you guys, because that was right there. That was my reality outside of even school, because school is something that I do here and there. The gang life and the street life was something that was every single day, 24/7. So this is something that I actually fought with and conflicted with within my mind, of if I should really change, and how can I change, and how can I get away from the gangs. And those questions are answered in my book called Diary of a Freedom Rider, The Experience. And so when I went through this metamorphosis within my mind, I decided, hey, I'm going to change no matter what. Go ahead. What was that?
How old were you at that time?
At that time, I was, I would say maybe around 15 or 16 years old.
Okay,
and so
great.
In 1994, I was 14, but when Meep came, that was around our sophomore, junior year. So I was around roughly like 15 or 16. And
right.
So
okay.
At that time, it was definitely a thing for me where I realized I wanted to change no matter what. And I wound up, you know, going through a lot of things as well that I spoke of in the book, such as being stabbed. I had friends turn on me. I had people, you know, decide that they didn't want to be my friend anymore, or people that decided that, you know, I'm the enemy now. And it was a hard time for me.
I can definitely see that. Well, because the inner city, I don't know if people are really familiar with how the inner city works. I went to an inner city school for years, and it is a wild place. I mean, like the wild, wild west. And
right.
It's for this teacher to be able to come in and grab your guys' attention, for one thing, you know, and then that you guys were receptive to that is, you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's really a miracle.
Yeah, definitely. And so a lot of people actually ask, you know, how did she change us? How did Erin Gruhl change you guys? And I always advise people that Erin Gruhl didn't change us. She actually just watered the seed. At least for myself, I would say she actually watered the seed that was planted in me years ago by different people.
Right.
And that's
right.
What I bring forth when I do a lot of my motivational speaking and speeches. I deliver speeches. I let people know that Ms. Gruhl, you know, she's a great woman. And the reason why I say she's a great woman and a genius woman is because she was able to take something that was within me already and mold it into something that can mold us for greatness and prepare us for greatness. And what I mean by that is by writing in these journals, she decided that when we were able to write in these journals, that would be able to bring the things that are within us out. So by bringing those things out and showing them to the rest of the world, therefore that'll be able to have other people be able to read about us and know who we are and everything else. But also she knew that we can be able to write on a basis where, you know, people can empathize with our story, but also understand our story. So it taught me how to write from a level of being very vivid and being very descriptive, more or less like a painter or someone like a Picasso or something, where you have this canvas and the canvas is our book and our writing is the painting and the paintbrushes are the pencils and the pens that we wrote with. And by being able to do that, it created this beautiful painting called The Freedom Writer's Diary. And when this book was released, we didn't even know that it was going to become a bestseller. We didn't know it was going to be made into a movie. We just did this book just simply because we wanted to help the people in our own neighborhoods. And thus, because of that, and because of the fact that we were doing it for the right reasons, it became a situation where it became a New York Times bestseller. It sold and has been converted into 11 different dialects. It's all around the country, and I mean, it's just done very, very, very well, and we're very much gracious and appreciative of it. And so with that, you know, we became, you know, a little bit older, and we started going off to college and everything else. And later on, we got this phone call, hey, you know, we need to get together again. So we wound up going to Europe and doing a book tour in Europe. And on top of going to Europe, you know, that was a great experience. We wound up getting a phone call again later on in 2006 or so, I would say. And they're like, hey, you know, we're going to make a movie. And thus, from that point on, it was like it was history. So I was very much amazed and shocked. And I'm glad that that happened, because the one that played me, my character is Marcus, the young man that his friend shot and so when they were kids in the movie, as well as he was homeless. Marcus is based on me. And the interesting thing about that is movie magic is so interesting, because they took this young man and found this young man that acted like me, he talked like me, he looked like me. Well, he favored me, not looked exactly like me. But, I mean, from that point on, they really recreated me. And so I was very overwhelmed by that, because the fact that I've never thought that that could happen within my life. You know, as kids, we always dream that, oh, well, one day somebody's going to, you know, there's someone's going to make a movie about me, or someone's going to write a book about me, or I'm going to write a book about myself. And I've gotten to do both. And so to be able to do that is just so amazing, because I've always wanted to be heard. And that's why a lot of people, when they read my bio, they the bio that I have about my speaking is a young kid that's never been heard, but now being heard around the world. And I like that saying, because it's true. And I heard actually someone that wrote a news article about me, they actually wrote that, and I took that and I ran with it, because it's true. I mean, I was an unheard child. You know, I was the baby of the bunch. I was the youngest of four children. And actually, the age gap between myself and my brother that was next to me was 12 years. So pretty much growing up, I grew up as like a single parent, as a single parent, single child, because all the other children were either almost out the house or out the house in a sense of the brother that was next to me was always incarcerated. So I was by myself growing up. So that's pretty much it.
Well, do you still journal to this day?
Yeah, definitely. But now, today, my journals are my books. I'm currently writing. I wrote the, you know, Diary of a Freedom Writer, The Experience. That's coming out April 21st. And, you know, all the other things that I write now are, you know, the various books that I'm writing. I also have another book that I'm writing that I'm currently trying to shop called Flower from Autumn. And it briefly entails a book of a young girl that's the book being told from the perspective of a Caucasian female. And the Caucasian female is actually becomes friends with this African-American female named Autumn that moves to the suburbs. And to make a long story short, the African-American woman, it talks about their friendship, kind of like a Thelma and Louise type story.
Mm-hmm.
But then
mm-hmm.
it becomes a situation where the young lady, Autumn, you know, something tragic happens to her. And, you know, it's, I can't tell too much, but something tragic
right,
happens
right.
to Autumn.
Well, it sounds
Autumn
really interesting.
A child, so, yeah, and so
wow.
when Autumn has the child or whatever, the girl Sarah, which is the lady that's telling the story, winds up getting the child, and, you know, the child name is Flowers. So thus the story being called A Flower from Autumn.
Oh, okay.
You know,
got it. Okay.
So, yeah, so it's definitely a great book. All the books that I'm writing at this time, you know, are definitely – I feel, you know, good. They're a part of me. There's another book called Secrets Touch that's actually about, is very dear to me because it's about family secrets, how a lot of family secrets and you know, people go through things like touching or rape or things of that nature within their family, and they never tell it, and they keep the secrets within their families, and a lot of mothers take the secrets of their families to their graves and everything else, so... that's another book that I'm writing in. So, I mean, what I'm trying to do is just get the message of things that I went through out there to help other people so people won't have to go through what I went through. A lot of people, when I do speaking engagements, they say, oh, I wish I was you, and you have a beautiful family, and I wish I had your life. And I'm like, if you could walk in my shoes and if you can feel, please feel free. Because you
right.
know, there's so many
yeah,
things that I encountered within my life.
Right. You have to take the whole package. The whole package is what got you where you are today. I mean, would they want to be that little 7-year-old selling drugs? Would they want to be that child whose father had died from AIDS? I mean, those are all big-time experiences that most people never go through in their entire life, let alone when you're at such a young age.
Exactly, and there's just so much pain. You know, if you can encounter that pain, then so be it. But the type of pain that I went through, I wouldn't wish on anyone, on even my enemy, because, I mean, even because of that on a personal level, you know, and I don't mind sharing this because the fact that, you know, people respect the fact that I'm so transparent, where I'm able to discuss the fact that I was actually diagnosed with PTSD, which is post-traumatic syndrome disorder. So pretty much I never fought a war in my life. I never been to Afghanistan. I never been to Iraq. But yet and still I come out with something that people that's been in all-out wars come back
mm-hmm.
home with sometimes. And, you know, it's scary. I have, you know, anxiety attacks a lot. And, you know, it's really, really scary, you know. And it takes a lot to be able to hold it together sometimes.
Well, yeah, I can. I mean, you've been stabbed, and you've been in gangs. You've had people mad at you for trying to leave the gangs. I mean, those are stressful situations. You know, those are beyond
right, yeah.
the norm of you know, everyday stress.
Right, and not just that, but on top of being homeless, on top of, you know, just being in situations where it felt like your parents don't want you and nobody wants you. You know, just all of those things is just very crazy. But yet and still, I appreciate a lot of things that I've been through because I firmly believe that the things that I went through actually helped keep me alive today. So with that, you know, even in the book, Diary of a Freedom Writer, The Experience, you know, I'm able to take all of these stories and things that I went through and be able to bring out the brighter day and the brightness in the situation. Such as, like, there's a story that I tell about the fact that when I was selling drugs, there was a young lady that came to me, and she advised me that, you know, she wanted drugs or whatever, and I told her, well, you know, you got to have your money and everything, and she didn't have her money. She advised me that she would offer sexual favors, and I said I didn't want it, you know, and I declined. And then she turned around, and she asked me, how old are you? And I was like, it doesn't matter how old I am. And so she was like, well, I'm asking how old you are because, you know, I think I got something that you want. And so I was like, well, what's that? And so she was saying, my daughter. I think I have a daughter that's around your age. She'll do anything that I tell her to do. You can have your way with her if you go ahead and front me today, and I'll pay you on the first. And so when she said that, I feel that that was the first time in my life ever and only time that I ever really, really considered, you know, hurting a woman.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And it's sad because, you know, there's a lot of those that are out there that does that. And what hurts my heart is the fact of, you know, just imagine, I didn't say, okay, but just imagine the other guys or the other drug dealers that she did approach that did say, okay. You
right.
know, so in that, though, to take the goodness out of that, that is one of the situations I write about in the book that make me think about the fact that, wow, maybe I am a good person. Maybe I do have a good heart because, you know what, I could have said yes or I could have given in, but yet still, because of the fact that I do have a pure heart and a soft heart for people, you know, I felt that that was
mm-hmm.
very sick. You know, even though the girl probably was my age at that time, I felt that that was very sick. You know, and at that time, we didn't have human trafficking and everything else because we're talking about this is about 95, 96, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, it was definitely, you know, the book, when people read Diary of a Freedom Writer, the experience, they'll be moved. They'll definitely realize that, wow, life is real and it's important. And, you know, also the fact that I buried over 35 friends and family members before the age of 16 is definitely a big deal. You know, and I just want people to not go through that. I want people to not even have to worry about that. You know, to be honest, sometimes I don't want people to be blind to it, but I want it to be so non-existent through my works in life that people will be, like, not worried about it no more because of the simple fact that, you know, I've done something in this world and made a mark in this world to make people not have to go that route in order to, you know, make money or do whatever it is that they're supposed to be doing, you know, because 9 times out of 10, people don't sell drugs because they just want to do it. People sell drugs because they have a family to support or because they need money for clothes or because they're trying to make money to have all these things that the media perceive as success.
Right, right, exactly, right. Well, let's see. You're a father now, aren't you, Darius?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
How do you explain this to your kids?
Well, at this point in time, I don't because I have a child that's 2 and 1 and the other is like 6 months.
Okay. So,
you know, to explain what I went through, you know, I can't necessarily do it at this point.
Right,
because they're
a lot younger.
But they're so amazing. You know, on my Facebook, you know, all those different things, you know, I have pictures of them because, you know, they actually, upon other things, they contributed to my life being saved, especially my oldest daughter. And the reason why my oldest daughter, I would say, saved my life is because later on in life, my mother and I developed an inseparable relationship. And, you know, when my mom and I, you know, I love my mom to death, you know, and I would tell my mom all the time, Mom, if you died, I don't know what I would do, and I couldn't live no more and everything else. And I firmly believe that. I firmly believed it. And so in 2010, my daughter was born. And when my daughter was born, I found out that my mom had cancer, lymphoma cancer. And then a few months later, she was at, you know, the final stage. And a few months later, she passed away. And so if it wasn't for my daughter, I don't know where I would be mentally or emotionally. But I realized that all the things I felt for my mom, I was able to put it into my daughter. And so
right.
It's so interesting how things work out because, like I said, you know, I mean, my mom was my everything, you know.
Right.
Now, you know, my daughter is my everything. Perfect
and
timing. Definitely.
Perfect timing, and I don't believe in coincidence. So, you know, I think it was a divine gift for you, you know, that, you know, that God knew, you know, how much you loved your mother and how much that you were going to miss her and how painful that would be, and he gave you a gift in return for calling her home. He sent you another gift, which is just, you know, just another beautiful story. And because of what you
Definitely.
Went through as a child, your children won't ever have to experience that. You protected them through your journey.
I hope not. You know, I hope not. When I sit with my daughters, I know a lot of people may find this a bit adolescent, but when I sit with my daughters, I take very big life lessons from a couple of cartoons, one of them being Finding Nemo and the other being The Lion King. And the reason why is because in The Lion King, you know, it's all about being able to fall into your destiny and reaching your calling and being able to bring those up behind you, you know, that may be within that same calling, you know. And so in The Lion King, he was called to be a king. And in my life, I feel I was called to be somebody, somewhat of a king of, you know, being somebody that could relate to people and being a person of the people and everything else. And, you know, also in Finding Nemo, you know, the father was so worried about losing his child that he was too much, you know, and he was too overbearing and over just over parenting, where he didn't allow his child to fly or swim,
right.
I would say. And so, you know, I see myself being that same type father sometime, where my daughter, she tries to do things that actually steps out from what, you know, the norm is. You know, she tries to just get up and walk, or she tries to get up and do different things. And as she was doing that, I had to teach myself to let her go. Let her be, you know, and God forbid when she gets a boyfriend or when she goes off to college. Like I was telling my wife, I said, wow, very, like, we want them to get out the house, but it's like when they go off to college or whatever they're going to do in life, I know I'm going to take her to college, I'm going to drop her off, I'm going to walk her up to her dorm, and she's going to have to just close the door in my face for me to leave because I don't want to let them go.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
It's a
big dichotomy.
So, like, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, it's just a big dichotomy with a parent. You know, there's a saying that you want to give your child the world, but then you want to save them from it too. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's definitely what it is, because we all know as adults and the things that we encounter that the world is such a cool place that, when, you know, why would you want to allow anything or anyone that you love into it, you know, to experience it for themselves? You almost want to be that force field in between them and the world in order to say, okay, well, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. But the sad part about it is they are going to have to bump their heads sometime, and they are going to have to, you know, deal with certain things. And the only way for them to excel is to let them go.
Exactly. Now, Dennis, I want to take you back to when you guys went to Europe. Were you able to actually go to the Anne Frank house?
Yes. Yes.
What was that like?
That was
like?
So amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing, and I just it was beyond amazing. I can't even find the words to express how amazing it was, because the simple fact that as you walk up that narrow space into the attic, it's like you can feel the presence of that family, the Otto Frank and the whole family that was up there, and you can just kind of feel, you know, the essence of what it felt like to be in that situation, and the things that Anne wrote about, like feeling like a caged bird. I definitely understand, because it's like when you go up in there, it's so small and compact, and to have all of these people together, you know, and bunched up, and you guys are in hiding. So you're worried about your life. You're not just worried about your life, but you're frustrated because you're piled up together. It's just you. It's unimaginable unless you actually do it. So for those that are going to, you know, Amsterdam, Holland, or anything like that, or going to Europe, definitely go check that out, you know, because this is very, very interesting. We also got to go to the Van Gogh Museum, and, you know, I'm a big Van Gogh fan. I learned a lot about him in my art class, and just his creativity and the things that he went through. I don't know. I'm kind of a fan of, like, the crazy people. I don't know why, or the people that I guess the world considers as crazy. No, seriously, because I'm a Van Gogh fan. You know, I'm an Edgar Allan Poe fan. you know, like, I'm fans of people that you know.
A little
outside
the mainstream.
Them as real.
Right.
I consider them as real. Like, you know, there's a lot of things we go through mentally, but because the fact that we feel like it's out of the norm, that a lot of people, you know, look at that or look at us crazy, but yet and still I feel a lot of those things that those people experienced and brought out, we all go through it, you know, and so
right.
It's
exactly.
Interesting how these beautiful things come out from people that, you know, like I said, people consider as crazy or whatever, and now we don't even really have a normal now, you know, which is a good thing, because now the normal is just whatever you are and whoever you are, and that's the good thing that we're able to just be now. You know, even in reality shows and everything, things are scripted and stuff like that, but we still can recognize what's real and what's not real. And so be it that we're able to realize and recognize those things means that within us there is a normal, and the normal is just being yourself.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And I do think it all goes back to what you said earlier, which is just a basic human need to be heard. And I think everybody has that same component. And that was the outlet. I mean, there was so much going on in your life, but you hadn't really no outlet for that. I mean, there wasn't people listening to you because they had their own noise going on. But through your journaling, you were able to express that. And I think that's what all artists kind of do, you know, like Van Gogh or any artist today. It's a form of self-expression that basically they just want to be heard. And I'm sure when you get out to these speaking engagements, people are telling you their stories. And are you giving them any advice on, you know, on how they deal with issues, you know, that you've escaped, that maybe they're still having to deal with as in their settings today?
Right. Well, definitely. That's the thing that's different for me. I feel that's the thing that's different about myself personally than a lot of other speakers is the fact that I offer my services on top of, you know, me just speaking. One thing I used to really dislike, I won't say hate because I don't necessarily hate anything, but one thing I did dislike is the fact that sometimes when we had assemblies in school, there would be somebody that come out from the news team or, you know, somebody that used to do the weather or something like that, some key personality. They'll come into our classroom or they'll come into our auditorium and, you know, they'll smile, they'll wave, they'll tell us, oh, you can do whatever you want to do. And, you know, this is who I am. And they'll be like, all right, see you later. And they're gone.
Right.
And that's
right.
It. And so it's like, now what do we have? You know, what do we have to hold on to? What hope do we have? And so what I like to do from my own experience is I like to go in, I feel the vibe of the room, I tell my story, I share everything that I need to share, I answer questions, I shake hands, and I offer, like, my Facebook, Twitter, things of that nature, and let them know that it's okay to talk to me. It's okay to send me messages. I will respond. And the reason why I do that is because I want them to know that I'm really there. Granted, yes, this is my living. Granted, yeah, this is what I do to make money. But I really want to be there. I really want to help. I really want to be around. I mean, granted, if I was rich, I would do it for free. And that's the thing of success. Like, I don't feel success is me being rich. You know, it contributes, but it's not me being rich. It's the fact that I'm able to wake up and do what I love every single day. And I have an objective, and my objective is to be able to help every single person that I can be able to excel and be something that I never was or could become. And not just that, but to make sure that those that are at that fork in the road can take that correct way instead of having that choice of good, bad, they can go good, and I can tell them about the bad so they don't have to go down that road. Now, some will still choose bad, but yet and still, they still have a chance to go good. That's why I go to the detention centers. One thing that really bothers me is that when I do assemblies, a lot of the teachers, they tend to leave all the bad kids behind and bring the good kids to come hear me. Well, the kids that I'm trying to reach are the ones you left behind, because I was the one that got left behind. So, you know, when I do speaking engagements at schools or anything that have something like that where they would leave kids behind, I let them know, hey, can you bring your kids for this time? Bring it as a detention, or tell them to come here as detention so I can be able to reach them, because some of them, somebody needs to hear something that I have to say. And what's the most rewarding thing is to have a child come to me and say, you know what, you helped change my life. And I didn't do anything but say you can do it. And it's so sad how some people, they tend to think that, oh, we have to do all these things and spend all this money and everything else, when all you need to do sometimes is show a little interest in that child, show that you care. See, that was the genius about Erin Grewell. She showed that she cared. She showed an interest. She earned our respect. She didn't just say, hey, this is who I am. This is what's going to happen. This is what we're going to do. She didn't tell us we were going to write a book. She didn't tell us we were going to go to Europe. She didn't tell us we were going to New York. She didn't tell us we would be recipients of the Anne Frank Award. She didn't tell us we would have New York Times bestseller. She didn't tell us we were going to have a movie. She just simply said, hi, my name is Miss Grewell, and I care, and I'm going to show you that I care. As a matter of fact, she didn't even tell us that she cared. She showed us that she cared, and through her caring, that made us care back, and we worked together, and that's how it became something so great. So that's
just amazing.
Encouraged me to be who I am and be able to do the things that I'm doing, because the fact that I know that the people that I'm reaching out to now are the future doctors. They're the future lawyers. They're the future philanthropists. They're the future humanitarians that are going to be there for my kids. And so in an investment in my kids' future, I'm investing in them, because if you don't invest in them, who's going to take care of your following generation?
Exactly. Well, and for many of those kids, especially in the inner city, that might be the very first time someone's ever said to them, I care about your future.
Right, right.
That they might not have ever heard that before. And so, you know, that someone's willing to go there. Like I said, I went to some, you know, really crazy inner city schools, and I went to those same assemblies where they would parade, you know, people that were well-known through to our assemblies, and then out they'd go. And basically we just looked at it as, you know, time to get out of class, because we knew they weren't coming back to that side of town ever again. And they brought them in usually under, like, big guard, you know, and, like, ushered them in and ushered them out and had a photo op. And so there wasn't – although I will say one time Tony Orlando came to our school, and he gave a talk, you know, back in the day with Delta Dawn and all that. But it was during the Iran hostage crisis. And he actually really took the time and stayed around. And, you know, I never really thought of about that until just now when you were saying, you know, how you hang around. He hung around that day, and it really did. And none of us, you know, we're not Tony Orlando fans, let me tell you. At that time, we were just a bunch of 9th and 10th graders, you know, and we were just, you know, being crazy, and it was just a crazy school and a crazy time. But we all of a sudden started liking Tony Orlando. We were talking about him like the whole rest of the school year. I went home and told my mother about Tony Orlando, and, you know, and we all were tying yellow ribbons around our wrists. And, I mean, and this was a crazy, crazy school where they were lighting people's hair on fire and stabbing people. And all of a sudden, Tony Orlando, you know, came in, gave us all yellow ribbons. I mean, thousands of kids. He stood there, talked to us, gave us, you know, yellow ribbons. We tied them around our wrists, and we all had that in common. And I really didn't even think too much about that until you said that. So it really, really does make a difference. You know, you just can't underestimate spending just a little bit of time, and that doesn't cost anything to spend time with someone.
Exactly.
And,
it costs nothing.
And show that you care. Exactly. Exactly. So what is the most, maybe the most common frustration that you see when the youth is talking to you? What do they think is holding them back, or what are the obstacles? Is there something that you see over and over again?
Well, one thing I noticed is that with myself, I wanted to change, I just didn't know how. And I know it sounds kind of dumb to some people, but the point, what I mean by that is the fact that I knew that I wanted different for myself, but I didn't know what. So in order to figure out what and how to be able to change those things, or that I had to be exposed to different things outside of my norm. What I mean by the norm, I mean going to school, going to football practice, coming home, doing nothing. Going to school, going to football practice, coming home, or, you know, whatever your normal routine is. But then when I started to be exposed to things like the art museums, when I started being exposed to things like the different books that, that you know, were written and stuff like that, you know, I still don't like reading to this day, and I openly admit that to anybody. I would preferably, you know, have the audio book than the regular book, you know, because it's something about reading that bothers me. And, you know, people say, well, maybe you just got to find something that you like to read. And no, I just don't like reading. Even magazines, you know, I'm more of a visual learner. I like to see things. I like to watch things. Now, I love a great movie. I love a great film. And if you tell me that, you know, it came from a book, I'd be like, oh, okay, good. Can I watch the movie, though? You know, and so it's like, well, why don't you like to read, but you're a writer? And the reason why I like to write is because I like to tell stories. I like to tell my story. You know, I write screenplays. I write plays as well, you know, scripts, things of that nature.
It's a form of self-expression. We're expressing yourself. Mm-hmm.
Right. And in everything that I have, every body of work that I have, and I hope there's a time in my life where I can sit back and I've just released everything that's come out of my crazy mind. And you guys will see that there's characters that I take from my life. It may be my mother. It may be somebody else. Like, The Flower from Autumn is actually based off a friendship of a young girl that I actually kind of dated on and off. She's more of a friend, though. And she has a friend, a best friend, like they're inseparable, and she's white. And they are like inseparable, you know. And so for me at that time, it was kind of like, really? Like, you guys have things in common? And you'll be surprised how much they have in common. Like, she's from like the super rich neighborhood, and like she like seems like life is just all together. And then the girl that's my friend, she is like from, you know, a background that's like almost like mine, but even some, I would say, kind of worse in a sense of the things she encountered from, you know, being molested and things like that. And then when they come together, it's like they equal each other out. Like, it's so beautiful. Like, I mean, when you guys read the book, you'll see, because it's I can explain it more through my words in the book than I am right now, because of the fact that when they come together, they gel and they equal each other out. The bad goes into the good of her, and the good in her goes into the bad of the other girl, and they just equal out, and it's beautiful. It's one of the most beautifulest friendships I've ever seen. And so,
is that available now, or are you still working on that?
No, I'm still working on it. I'm trying to actually get that published through a bigger publishing house than where I'm at now. So if anybody's listening from Penguin or, you know, anywhere else,
you know,
please give me a call.
We've had quite a few Penguin authors on our show, so a lot of the publicists do listen in from Penguin. We've had quite a few of their writers on our show. But the Diary of Freedom Writers is available for pre-order now, right?
Yeah, Diary of a Freedom Writer, The Experience, is definitely available for pre-order. It's being released through Tate Publishing, which I give them much props. They're definitely a great publishing house. And they've had my back. I mean, I don't have a literary agent or anything like that. So, you know, they've taken me on and taken a chance on me, and they've been great. You know, they've had my back. There's a couple of legal things that happened, and they've stuck with me. And, you know, they're a Christian publishing house. So, you know, they definitely stand behind their brand of religion, of how they feel and stuff like that. And I really appreciate them. I'm glad that they were able to step out on faith and help me out, because, you know, it's sad how hard it is to break into an industry. You can have all the talent in the world, and it's really about who you know. And it's just so sad, because there's so much talent out there that, like, I just hope that once I reach my plateau, or, you know, climax of a career within writing and everything else that I'm doing, that I hope that I can help bring those people to the forefront, because there's so many great stories that need to be told. And we're beginning to see the same type of movies and films and everything else. And through my time of growing up and going to college and stuff, I've met so many filmmakers and documentary people that are just so amazing. Like, I have friends, Rotho and Adrian Balik. They did a recent documentary called Happy. And the documentary is just simply on the fact of what makes people happy. And what
I
is
saw
being
that
happy
documentary.
All about?
I
yeah,
saw
that's
that
my
documentary.
Friend, Rotho,
was...
the director. Yeah,
that, that
and,
was
and
really, really
it,
good. I love that.
Really,
I bought it. I bought
really.
It. Not only did I see it, I bought it. And it is good,
yeah,
and it is fascinating
stuff.
On being happy. Yeah, but
exactly.
That's a whole other show, but that was amazing. And
I
do think,
it.
You
I
know, you haven't come this far, Darius, you know, for the road to end now for you. There's, you know, all of these things are going to come together, and you are such a fantastic person and a great, you know, speaker, and your story is timeless, and it affects so many people. And so there's going to be big things in store for you, my friend.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate it.
So how can people get a hold of you, follow up on you? You said you have a Facebook, you have Twitter, and you want to go ahead and kind of give all that information out?
Yes, definitely. I have a Twitter. My Twitter handle is Urban Prince. That's the pen name that I started using in high school. So don't get mad at me for those that are against, you know, different things. It's Urban Prince, H-E-R-B-A-N-P-R-I-N-C-E. Kind of a play off the word urban, but, you know, H-E-R-B. So it's Urban Prince, H-E-R-B-A-N-P-R-I-N-C-E. That's my Twitter handle. And then I have my Facebook, of course, and you can just look me up, Darius Garrett, and my website, DariusOnline.com. That's pretty much the hub for everything, DariusOnline.com. You can go there and book me for speaking events, acting engagements, you know, because I do act as well. I'm actually on something that's out right now for Comedy Central called The Crow Show. It's a comedy show, sketch comedy. With Nick Kroll, he's a comedian, and so I'm on that. That's on Comedy Central. Tomorrow I will be featured on the Ricky Lake Show, the new Ricky Lake Show that's coming on with my wife about the mishaps of kids, having kids. And so you'll see my beautiful children and my wife and myself on there tomorrow. And what else? Of course, like I said, Diary of a Freedom Writer, The Experience, is coming out April 21st. And, you know, I'm just trying to do all that I can to get myself out there and put myself out there, you know, just seeking people that's willing to work and be able to donate their time to help, you know, help me get out there and, you know, just kind of help me obtain speaking engagements, because I'm really trying to get my message out there, a message of hope, you know, a message of tolerance, a message of change. And I feel we all have a part to play in that, you know. So if any of those are willing to volunteer and be part of this movement, definitely go to that website. Also, my company website is DEnterprisesLLC.com, which is a company that I started based on, you know, when my mother passed, you know, I did something with my life. And that's a whole other story, but make a long story short, I was having issues trying to work a regular 9-to-5 and everything else. Kept getting laid off for whatever reason, and my mom, before she passed away, she said, "Darius, you just can't keep a job." She was like, "Maybe you should just make one up." And so when she said that, I thought about it, and was like, "Oh, okay," you know. And so that's how I started my company, and that's how I ended up doing the things that I'm doing, from the acting and the movies and things of that nature. So there's a whole lot coming from my camp. You know, I just need the people to help put those things together and formulate it and put it out there into the world, because I guarantee you that once everybody starts to see what I'm doing and everything, you know, you guys will further understand what I'm trying to do and what it's all about. And I, you know, thank you for having me on the show, because, you know, it's so many people that you got to go through so many things just to be heard. And with you and your guests and your listening and your listeners, you know, I'm glad that you were able to just take a little bit of time to share with myself to get the word out there of what I'm trying to do. And hopefully it'll catch, that people will be able to pay attention to what I'm doing and be able to be part of it. And I thank you for that. I'm very, very, very thankful for what you've done for me.
Well, very, very happy to do it. You all know how to get a hold of Darius. You don't have any excuse, you know, to say, I don't know how to get a hold of Darius. He's given you every way to get a hold of him. We have it on our website. You know, if you replay the show, you'll be hearing it. The show will be running on Seattle Wave Radio again in rotation over the weekend, so you can hear the show again. But get a hold of Darius. If you have any questions, you want him to come speak at your school or to some, you know, some kids that you know. You've heard him, you've listened to him for the last hour, and he knows what he's talking about. He's the real deal, you know. This, you know, he ain't making this. You can't make that stuff up. He lived it, and now he's got the authority to talk about it. So Darius, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And I just only wish you the most success and the best success. And I think you know, the road is going to be long and just full of great opportunity for you.
Thank you, and hopefully I'll be able to do your show again, because we do plan on putting together a West Coast tour for the book
Diary
of a Freedom Writer: The Experience, and I plan on starting up that way towards towards like Portland and Portland, Oregon, and all of that up that way, and working my way all the way down to like San Diego. So we should be hitting your town, and when we do, you're in Seattle, correct?
Yes, and you
Are
know
you
what? Just get a hold of me, and we will get the word out, and we'll get people out to your signings, and you know we'll support you all that we can. So just keep in touch with us, and then let us know when you're coming up this way, and we will spread the word and get you back on. No problem. Open invitation anytime.
I'm hyped about this book. You guys are gonna love it. It's gonna be great.
Well, I am excited about it. So thanks for coming on, and I will be talking to you soon.
All right. You have a great day.
Okay. Thanks, Darius.
Yo me olvido.
thank Darius for coming on our show. We had a great time with him. You can find more about Darius at dariusonline.com. Thank you for listening, and keep up with Darius. He's coming to a city or town near you. Catch you next time.